Welcome to the Savvy Scribe podcast. I am so glad you're here. Before we start the show, if you're interested, we have a free Facebook group called Savvy Nurse Writer Community. I appreciate you following and listening to me today, and I would love if you would subscribe via iTunes. And if you love our show, can I ask you for a review? Select ratings and reviews and write a review. It's that simple. I would love to read your review, and it helps other nurses like you find our podcast. Thanks so much.
Welcome to another episode of the Savvy Scribe podcast. Today I'm with Scott Stransky. He is the founder and content lead at Full Funnel Content, a boutique content development firm serving the B2B tech industry. After nearly a decade in various sales and client service roles, Scott broke into professional writing by producing case studies for well-known tech brands like Adobe and Cisco. So today, Scott is highly sought-after copywriter, content strategist, and a business consultant who works with everyone from the 10-man startup to the global Fortune 500 companies. His work includes various long and short-form content for organizations serving industries like cloud computing, HR tech, software as a service, and both mental and physical health platform providers. We are going to be talking about today cracking the code to consistent client work. If you guys don't have a pen and paper out, take a pause on this podcast and grab one because you're going to get a lot of value today.
Welcome to the Savvy Scribe Podcast, a podcast for healthcare professionals who want to build a profitable writing business. I'm your host, Janine Kalbach. I'm a wife, mother of two incredible boys, labor and delivery nurse who created my own profitable writing business back in 2015, and I'm ready to share my secrets along the way with some help from some incredible guests. My goal is to help you open up your creative mind with my podcast, courses, and Facebook group, the Savvy Scribe Collective, to help you build your own profitable writing business. So let's take a listen. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. Excited to have you. You have so much great background that I was reading about and telling our listeners about. But first, tell us, I always like to do a little background for those of you that don't know, Scott, how where you are? Like, what's your career path look like? We've already talked about prior to recording our Midwestern.
Right.
But
yeah,
our
Midwestern roots.
Yeah.
Career-wise, my career path is sort of a winding road, I think, like a lot of people. I have a marketing degree. And unfortunately for me, I graduated college like right after 9/11. So getting a marketing job really wasn't in the cards. I just needed to take whatever I could get. And so that moved me to Chicago, and I started out in sales. I started my career working for as an admissions consultant for a for-profit art school. Selling kids on the dream of going to art school, even though I have no art background. But I, was fully confident in my ability to learn and to sell and to convince other people that this was the right thing for them, provided that it was the right thing for them. And sort of bounced around from sales job and a client services type jobs, account management type jobs, until 2009. After I had moved to Denver, I had come into contact with an agency in the Bay Area that specializes in customer testimonial marketing, what they call customer advocacy programs. And I had interviewed for basically an account management role within their organization, but they found that I was too junior, but picked up on the fact that I really liked to write. During my interview, we talked all about this. And so they called me back a couple of weeks later, said, "Hey, we want to create a hybrid role for you. We'll teach you how to write, and you can use whatever other sales and account management skills you've developed over the first 7 or 8 years of your career to help us with some other stuff while we get you up to speed." And within 3 months of starting that job, I was a full-time writer, writing case studies for big software companies. And that sort of snowballed into some other stuff. So one software company turned into another software company. And after about 3 years at that agency, I decided I'd had enough and wanted to go out on my own. So I started writing freelance, called up a few of my friends and my colleagues and my former coworkers asking for a little bit of help finding some work, if they had anything that they could throw my way. A couple of them did. And that just sort of got me started down the path of freelance content writing.
That is awesome. So tell me a little bit, because you have the marketing background, you did the sales, and they were like, we'll bring you in to, but we'll teach you how to write. Did they send you to some like writing course? Did they just say, this
no.
is kind of how we do it and follow this sort of template?
Yeah, it was the latter. It was more the latter. So we started out with just a writing test, because, you know, somebody telling you that they like to write is different from somebody being able to write.
Sure.
And I was always the kid in college who preferred, writing a 20 or 30 page term paper to taking a final exam. It's just storytelling and, you know, sort of having that real estate to make an argument has always just been sort of my thing. It's come naturally to me. It's been easy for me. And I strongly prefer it to the alternative. So they gave me a writing test. Here's a sample of what we do. Here's a recording and some call notes from an interview that we just did recently. Go ahead and try to write a case study and see what happens. And so they liked it enough that they could see the raw talent there. But no, there was no real formal training. It was throw me to the fire. I remember when I first started, the first draft of the first story that I submitted to my boss, when it came back with red line edits, it looked like somebody had bled all over my screen.
Then you cried.
I just sat there for a good 5 minutes looking at it going, oh my God, what did I get into? This is...
They hate me. Yes.
Are they gonna fire me on day one? So over the next couple of weeks and months, I turned that into a game. And my game became, how many of my original words can I get to keep in the draft of the story? And over the successive weeks and within 2 or 3 months, I got to keep all of them. And at that point, they just sort of turned me loose and said, all right, young Padawan, your training is done. Here you go.
Nice. And look at, you had great success. Isn't that awesome?
So I was fortunate enough to get that role and take advantage of it and put it into motion for future stuff. So I'm lucky in that regard.
So then you were like, okay, you know what? I can do this by myself. Did you go off freelance with case studies, or did you start just making your service a little broader?
So I started with case studies, and I quickly realized that even though it's a very valuable skill to have, it's kind of a one-track mind, and that the companies needing content support out there need somebody who can write more things than just case studies. So I started with case studies, knowing that it's my core competency and that I had 3 years of experience doing it, but actively sought out opportunities to start writing things like blogs and ebooks and white papers and some of these other content assets that have become really popular over the last decade or 15 years even. And had to, in my mind, go out and get them by offering, very low pricing and sort of introductory pricing just to get my feet wet. So over the first couple of years doing this on my own, I was able to make my money writing case studies and gave it back while trying to learn to write all these other things.
We'll be right back.
You guys, I wrote a book and it's launched and I want you to check it out. Go over to Amazon, look for Savvy Nurse Writer. It'll come up right away, but it's called Savvy Nurse Writer, A Nurse's Blueprint for Starting a Profitable Freelance Health Writing Business. We have lots of reviews, all 5 stars, top new release in the first week it was launched, and I want to share it with the world. So head on over to Amazon.com, search Savvy Nurse Writer, and get your copy today. That makes sense. That's a good way to start. So let's dive in. Let's dive into this cracking code for consistent client work, because who doesn't want consistent client work, right?
Exactly. Especially
so what's
as a freelancer.
What's the secret code? I want to know. Hey guys, I have a free masterclass coming up, Health Writing Business Foundations for Nurse Writers, on March 1st at 2 p.m. Eastern or March 14th at 12 p.m. Eastern. You are going to learn a lot in this class. Come join us, savvynursewriters.com/free class to get your ticket. And just so you know, seats are limited, so get your ticket now, savvynursewriter.com/free class. Thanks.
New year, new group. We have a new group on Facebook. We just changed the name, Savvy Nurse Writer Community. Also, we changed the website name, savvynursewriter.com. If you're using the old name, it'll still redirect, but it's a new year. Time to up our SEO.
So originally I had planned on calling it the Cracking the Code to Business Development as a Freelancer. And I realized that a lot of people have a process that works for them to go and find new client work, but it's not always the highest paying work or the most stable work or the most sustainable work. So this code sort of came about through hardship of my own. I only recently started telling this story because it never really occurred to me that that anybody would care. But a couple of years after going out on my own, I found myself in huge financial trouble because I wasn't earning quite that much. I was earning enough to pay my monthly bills, mostly my mortgage and the utilities and whatnot. But had to take on a roommate to help out with the mortgage, but I wasn't making enough to put anything aside for retirement. And I certainly wasn't making enough to put anything aside for the IRS, because, in entrepreneur school where we all went, they don't tell you that you need to pay taxes quarterly. True. So the next thing I know, I see a bill, a tax bill for more than 15 grand. And my heart just dropped to my stomach. And anyway, so I did what any sane person would do. I went back in house, took a job just for a couple of months to get caught up, so I could refinance my house, pay off my debt. And as soon as that was done, and I think it took 3, maybe 4 months, as soon as that was done, I wanted to go back out on my own. And this time I was going to do it differently. So that's where this business development and consistent client work code has come from. And it's been a work in progress for me. And it'll be a work in progress for everyone else that I think that implements it. But I've found great success to the point where this past year, even amid a global pandemic and all this terrible stuff happening on the side, businesses closing, friends and family losing jobs left and right and center, all this just sort of sky is falling. I had my biggest earnings year ever, my highest income year ever, including when I had a job that paid me six figures a year.
Nice.
So over the course of the last few years since that incident, I've tried to find a way to shortcut getting to a business decision maker. And that involves, for me, and hopefully for a lot of people that follow this sort of same methodology, it starts with understanding how to target who you want to work for. For me, that meant going to jobs boards and searching for companies who were hiring for jobs that I could do, even though I had no desire to do them full time. Because what that told me was they have a need. They have obviously the budget for hiring headcount, but maybe they don't want to spend that budget on headcount. Maybe they would want a more temporary solution and a cheaper solution. And that's hiring a contractor, because you don't have to deal with any of the benefits administration or a lot of the overhead that comes with hiring a full-time employee. So I would look at jobs boards, find out who is hiring for the types of things that I like to do, writing ebooks and white papers and case studies and blogs, pure content development, maybe with a little content strategy thrown in, because I do also enjoy that. Once I've identified these target prospects, I'll do a pretty deep dive search on LinkedIn to try to figure out if I can, who might be the hiring manager for this role. So a lot of times these jobs will say, this role reports to the vice president of marketing or the director of demand generation or whatever the title might be. So I'll go to the company's LinkedIn page and I'll do a quick search for that title and I want to see who comes up. If it's one of those job postings that doesn't really direct you to a particular person or title, I'll still go through the same process and just sort of by process of elimination, narrow it down to two or three people that I think might be heavy influencers or maybe even the hiring manager. And at that point, I'm sending them a direct email to their corporate email using an email scrubbing tool. I'm tracking what happens with that email with an email tracker. So I want to see if and when they open it, how often they open it, what platform they're opening it from, whether it's mobile or desktop device, because that I think tells you a little bit about what's going on with your message. If it's just a quick open and then no response, there's a good chance that it was deleted. But if it bounces around and you see a number of opens across both mobile and desktop, that's a pretty good indication that they're not only reading it, but if it gets shared, there's a good possibility that they're also sharing it. And that tells me that I need to follow up with them within a certain time frame. And once that follow-up happens, I will just go ahead and push for a meeting, for a 15 or 20 minute get to know you meeting. And that conversation always turns into something a little bit longer. You propose 15 or 20 minutes, they propose an hour. And that's exactly what I want. I want them to be the ones making the decision that they need more than 15 or 20 minutes to talk to me. So that gives me all the time that I need to explain my background, to understand what they're looking for, and to convince them that working with me is a better option than working with another writer or going out and hiring a full-time writer instead.
Perfect. Yep. Now, do you notice when they get you on the call that one of their first questions is rates?
Yeah, sometimes. I find that the prospects who go immediately toward cost are not generally the ones that I end up working with very often. Mm-hmm. Because they're more interested in how little they can spend versus what they get for their money.
Yep.
So yes, it's important, I think, to have a rate card or some sort of standardized pricing, even if it's just tentative. You do want to maintain a little bit of flexibility in your pricing, depending on the complexity of the work or the length of the work or a number of other variables. But having an answer, even a ballpark answer for them is important for just getting over the hump. So yeah, they do tend to ask at various points during the conversation, but I don't find often that the companies that I end up working with were the ones who would jump immediately to how much is this going to cost me.
Sure. Sure. Do you, what was I going to ask? Oh, I know. When you do the email tracker and you see that mm-hmm. they opened it and maybe they opened it again, so you know they didn't delete it.
Yep.
When do you do a follow-up?
So a lot of it depends on how many opens I see. So to your point, if I see that they've opened it once and it's just on mobile, more than likely what's happening is they're very much like me, where I check my work email pretty much wherever and whenever I want, right? If I'm out and about, I will still open my phone just to see if anybody's emailed me. That's what I believe is happening with these hiring managers. They might be tied to their job or married to their job, so they're checking their email on the road or at home or during non-work hours just to see what this new message is. And then they see what they think is a sales message, and they'll probably just delete it. But when I see that they've opened it on mobile, they've opened it on desktop, they've opened it on mobile again, they've opened it on desktop 2, 3, 5 more times, if I see that they've opened it maybe two or three more times, I'll schedule an email to go out about a week after my initial one.
Yeah.
But if I see that, and maybe a little bit longer, depending on how busy I am at the moment and how eager I am to take on potentially new work. But if I see that they've opened it 5, 10, 15 times, it tells me that they're probably sharing it with their team. Maybe they're not the decision maker and they're sharing it with people, with the person who is, or maybe they're sharing it with the rest of their team and some others in their team who have some input on how to proceed. That point, I'm sending an email, a follow-up email right away, probably within 2 or 3 days, with with a message that, hey, you know, I may have forgotten to send you this or to share a bit of information with you. Sorry about that. Here you go. Or I'll follow up with, like a lot of salespeople do, with a piece of content that's not from me. Maybe it's an article, maybe it's a report, something like that, that I find might be relevant for them or might be helpful for them to understand, just to try to elicit a response.
Nice, nice. Do you do some sort of like, what do you put in your subject line for initial? Do you do something like catchy, or do you just put Scott Stransky, writer?
Yeah, no. So I think a mistake that a lot of freelancers make when looking for new business is they commit a ton of time to letters of interest. These like 5-page huge, long, detailed letters about who I am, what I do, where I've been, all of this stuff. I try to keep it very short, or as short as I can. Having been on the other side as a hiring manager prior to my time as a freelancer, I understand what the attention span is for a potential client or a potential hiring manager, and it's not very long. Mm-hmm. They don't want to read a novella. They don't want to read a long, in-depth biography about who you are. So what I have found, and I've tested this on my own, and I would encourage other people to test their own subject lines. For me, the most effective subject line has just been, hey, whatever their first name is, let's chat about your company's whatever operations. Maybe it's Acme Corp's marketing operations, or Acme, whatever the company is, a particular job title or job function usually gets an open rate somewhere between 30 and 50%.
Nice, nice.
And I've seen it as high, when I was doing a more concentrated and concerted business development effort, I've seen it creep up as high as 60 or 70%. Now, obviously that's just open rate, and that's the first step, that the first goal is to get your email open. The second one is obviously to get a response, which is
that
where
first line having read. Get that first line right.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta sort of flick them in the nose, say, hey, I'm over here, pay attention to me. So yeah, a subject line, very simple, straightforward, conversational, I think is really the way to go, because these people get a ton of emails every day. And a lot of them are sales emails and sales pitches from other vendors. Maybe it's a software vendor, it's some other service provider. And all of those subject lines are almost all the same. Do you have time to chat? Do you have time to talk? What's holding you back? Some sort of rhetorical question, or even a direct question, that just sort of indicates to them, oh, this person doesn't know me and wants to sell me, versus a more conversational approach of, hey, Janine, let's chat about your podcast. That's going to get your attention, because I've personalized it without even having to really personalize anything.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. I like that a lot. And it is nice that you have that insight of being the hiring manager in the past to know like how busy these people are. When you send out like a helpful article, do you send an article related to like what their marketing, troubles might be?
Yep.
Or yeah. Okay. Their actual like client base stuff.
A little bit of both. So depending on what I'm hoping to gain from them or what I want to do for them, it's kind of a subjective thing based on what I know of them from their LinkedIn profile and what I know of them from their business job postings. But sometimes I'll send an article about their industry, or about maybe even what their competitors are doing, just to let them know that I'm paying attention to what's going on in their market and that I can help them compete with this type of content. For other companies who, might not be as advanced or as mature, I might share with them a content marketing or a copywriting best practice tip, some article about how to write better, how to engage your audience, little tips that might compel them to say, oh, this person is more than just a writer. He's a strategist, or he can help us as a resource contribute some of this expertise and knowledge to help grow our business.
And have you noticed that they still go on to hire for a full-time role and use you as freelance?
Very, very rarely have I experienced that they go and hire a full-time role.
I think a lot of times
they realize it's cheaper, that they can get the same or better quality work.
Sure.
And that's really the best situation to be in, because at that point they come back and say, hey, I love the ebook that you wrote. Do you have time for something else? Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is the key for creating this consistent client work, or this consistency in your client work, is that is an opportunity to sell more and make it known that even if you're a one man or a one woman shop, you have more bandwidth. You have the ability to scale with whatever need they might have. So for me, I will periodically use some subcontractor writers. I will always actively looking for writers to help me out, with some of my overflow work, so that I can say yes with confidence when they ask, hey, can you take on more? I can just say yes and figure out how to fulfill it later. I think some people who are really heavily in the work-life balance camp might bristle at that a little bit. But I think, from a pure business creation standpoint and growth standpoint, I have found that saying yes to those types of opportunities has worked best for me to help get from where I was to where I am.
I agree with you. And actually, that's actually what happened with me during COVID. During COVID, I had a lot of work on my own, right? So I had a lot going on. And then COVID hit. And now I'm like this virtual teacher for my kids and still running the business and all the things, right? So that's what I ended up doing, was starting to subcontract with other nurses that I helped become writers. They were either doing it full time now, or they were also, just doing it freelance. And they were like, yeah, we'll take on extra work. So it was like, okay, well, I already know and trust you. I think this is going to be just fine. And it ended up working out well. So, and I feel like that is a way to scale a little bit more.
It really is. But for people who don't want that, who don't want to deal with hiring or managing subcontractors, I still think that this is a reasonable business building opportunity for them, knowing that a lot of freelancers struggle with one-off projects. That's one of the biggest issues that we have in this line of work, is where's the next project and paycheck coming from?
Right.
So, and I think anything that you can do, even if you want to put a limit on how much you're able or willing to work, when a client asks if you can take on more, it's not a matter of just saying yes. It's a matter of saying yes and. Yes, I can do this. And would it make sense for us to have a conversation about your larger content needs, so that we can start mapping out what your next quarter looks like? So that could act. And if you're able to have that conversation and put some sort of agreement together, you've eliminated one need for going out and finding yet another new client.
Yes. Yes. Well, and it is nice that you could just say like, yes, and then go, okay, I'll figure this out. And I feel like in the entrepreneurial world, that's what we do. We figure it out.
It is.
The biggest gift I feel like we have as entrepreneurs is we will find a way. And that's just, it's a great skill to have. And it's an easy way to make money, to build a business. And
it is, and
it's not easy in the sense of like what your steps are to find these managers and to email them and really personalize stuff. It takes time to do this, but
it's
easier than sending the LOIs to so many different organizations, not getting any read, or getting one read and then deleted, and or reaching out on LinkedIn just to have like, oh, hi, how are you? And, going nowhere with that. If you don't know that they're hiring, it's kind of a waste of time. So
exactly. And I think the other big key here is that tools like InMail on LinkedIn are very useful. And I've gotten some value out of them myself in the past, but you only get a handful of them per month, unless you're willing to shell out whatever it is, $70-$80 for a premium, or, you know, $100 for a sales navigator. All the tools that I use are free in some manner or another. They're, you know, they'll have some upgrade opportunities or options for new features, but by and large, for the amount of work that a freelancer can actually handle. Because the other thing is that I get a lot of emails, and maybe you do too, from you know, LinkedIn marketing gurus who can help you set 10 or 15 appointments per week with new prospects.
Yeah.
I don't know a freelancer on earth who wants that, because nobody can handle that. What happens if you close all of them? What happens if all 15 of them say yes? There's a difference between, you know, telling your clients that you can take on some more work so that they'll keep you around longer, and just overworking yourself and driving yourself into the ground trying to figure out how to support 10 or 15 clients. So I get a lot of those, and I suspect that other people do too. And so you've got that on one end, and then all these paid tools that on the other end. I wanted something in between, using free tools that I could do at my own pace to grow my business the way I wanted to, with the companies that I wanted to grow with.
Well, and the fact that, you know, 10 to 15 new clients a week or whatever, that's at least 10 to 15 hours of conversation you're going to be having too. Like, you have to block all that out, and that's a lot. Plus now you have to, now you have to separate all them in your brain for who does what and what strategy, and that's a lot. So yeah, it's, I agree with unpaid, you. Like, I like this approach that you
have. It's unpaid time. Like that 10 to 15 hours unpaid. That's non-revenue driving. That's an expense. Not only does it not necessarily lead to new business, but you've lost 10 or 15 hours that week of time that you could have been spending on existing client work, or talking to existing clients, or talking to targeted prospects that you have a better chance of closing and developing a longer term relationship with.
Well, and it's funny, because it's like, I think I've done your way. I've done like the InMail. I've done trials of the Sales Navigator. Tried, you know, you just try all these different things to see what sticks, right? So I've done the side of like sending some messages to people on LinkedIn that are, you know, content manager, to see if they need help from freelancer. And it's funny, because it's even on the Sales Navigator, you can see that they like they're not even active on LinkedIn. So then you're sending a message to nobody, basically. You might as well just, you know, throw money out the window.
I read a stat recently that the average corporate LinkedIn user is only on the site, I think the stat was maybe 18 minutes per month.
Jeez. Well, yeah. Which, so then you think about it, that's, you have to go to their corporate email. You know, that's where they are, because they have to be. So yeah, no, that's a great strategy.
Yeah. Otherwise you're trying to hit this 18 minute per month window with a message on LinkedIn, hoping that they see it. And that of all the other messages and all the other activities that they might be participating in on LinkedIn, they choose yours. They choose to respond to you instead of anything else.
Yeah, good luck. You know, because now there's other freelancers also reaching out.
Exactly. So, you know, I applied the same methodology, the same approach when I was looking for a full-time job. I feel like this sort of strategy is, can be universally applied to both full-time and freelance jobs, but also across industries. So when I was looking for a full-time job, again, I would look to see who's hiring, knowing that there's an actual job potentially there for me. And rather than applying to jobsatcompany.com, I would go through the same process of finding who I thought was the hiring manager and asking for a quick conversation just to get to know them and so that they could know me. And it turned into interviews. So, you know, during my job search a few years ago, again, when I had to go back in-house, I had no problems getting first interviews. I think in 1 week I had 6 first interviews just using this same, just applying what I had developed for my freelance business, to a full-time job search, but without all the refinements and you know, sort of the positivity that I've got around it now.
No, yeah, I love it. I think everybody, I mean, you got to take away something out of this conversation. There's many ways to go about trying to get some clients, but I think you are. I think you're cracking the client consistent code here. I love it.
I'd like to think so. I, you know, for me, it's resulted in a number of long-term clients. I now have three of them on retainer. Nice. So I have, you know, one of the biggest issues that I always had and that I know that that other freelancers have is the feast and famine cycles, right? The boom and the bust, where you go for a bank loan. They don't really like self-employed people because you don't typically see them with predictable monthly income. And I think that's really the end result of applying this sort of mentality and this methodology and this strategy is more than just finding new clients. It's about keeping them long-term, building them, building a long-term relationship with them so that ultimately as the freelancer, you can have the same level of predictable revenue and income as you would in a full-time job that gives you a paycheck.
Right, right. Well, I love this. And I thank you so much for sharing it with this audience. I think you guys got to connect with Scott. And actually, Scott and I met over in the freelance content marketing writer group over on Facebook that Jennifer Gregory runs. And she has a great book too, The Freelance Content Marketing Writer. We'll link that in the show notes. But yeah, you give so much value to that community as well. I was, you know, playing around on there last night, saw you, they're giving your value. And I just think it's so great to hear other people just helping other freelancers. Like it's a tough world out there. It's you're alone a lot and sometimes you don't know what to do. So it's nice to hear from mentors like you to help people along the way.
Yeah, I'm really happy to do it. I'm passionate about this. I more so than the actual client work, I think the process of building something from scratch for yourself is exciting, but it's also really hard. And I've gone through a lot of those challenges myself. I've made a ton of mistakes that if I can help other people avoid and have a little bit less stressful path or meandering path to a successful career, then I'm always happy to contribute. So, you know, if your listeners want a little bit more information on this, they can join me next week and the week after for a quick webinar as well.
Right. So give me those dates and a little bit more information on where to find you.
Yep. So on February 18th at 11 a.m. Mountain, and again on February 24th at 11 a.m. Mountain, I'm running a webinar called Cracking the Code to Consistent Client Work for Freelancers. It'll be an hour-long webinar, and I will walk everyone through basically this methodology that you and I were talking about, as well as some of the more mindset oriented and process oriented pieces that they're going to need to put together to make this successful for them.
Perfect. Do you have a website that they can go to?
Yes. So they can visit www.funnelcontent.com, F-U-N-N-E-L content.com. You'll see an events page on the website. And both of the webinars are listed there. It'll click you through to a registration page. And once you get that, we'll be ready to go.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, we will definitely see you there. And I really appreciate you coming on the show today. Good luck in 2021. I know it's tough out there, but I wish you great success, especially after last year. Let's bring it up another six figures. How about that?
Exactly. Pleasure was all mine. I'm looking forward to keeping in touch. And thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Take care.
You too.
Was that not a great episode, you guys? Come over to the Facebook group, Savvy Nurse Writer Community, and tell me what you thought of this episode. I loved it. And thank you, Scott,
for
all your
time today. That's a wrap for today's episode of The Savvy Scribe. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's show, we'd love for you to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Until next time.
Again, thank you for listening. If you're ready to explore freelance writing as your next PRN job or even full-time, I invite you to check out our Savvy Nurse Writer community on Facebook and visit SavvyNurseWriter.com to help you get started today.